Welcome to episode 15 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. This is Andrea. I'm here with
Andrew.
And we have a special guest today. His name is Dario. Say hi, Dario.
Hi, Dario.
I love when people do that. I'm
sure everybody does that.
No, you'd be surprised everybody doesn't do that.
Really? Yeah, just really. The really funny ones.
Exactly. So no, Dario,
sense of humor.
Yes, exactly. So some of you may know Dario. You might have seen him around, especially because he's here. He's at Stinkweeds. He works at Stinkweeds. So we're actually recording here at Stinkweeds. So thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast world.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
Are there any social media handles you want to give out to anyone?
Sure. You can always check out what Stinkweeds is up to on Facebook. We have a page. If you just search for Stinkweeds or facebook.com/Stinkweeds. We also have an Instagram, which is, we're just Stinkweeds Records on Instagram, I believe. We've got a lot of content on there. We also have a website with a blog, and once a week we update the blog with reviews, new albums that have come out that we're enjoying, older albums. We have a segment about the records that kind of just end up getting lost in record stores that nobody ever buys, and they're there for years, and we'll pull out these oddball records and do reviews on them, things like that. So a lot of content out there.
Yeah, I think I saw it. Was it something like Getting Lost in the Alphabet or something like
alphabetized
that?
Alphabetized into obscurity.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I thought that was cool because I did read that.
Awesome.
So. And do you guys have a Twitter?
We do not have a Twitter.
I wasn't sure. That's like, I got to ask.
This store, we're pretty much all pushing 40 here. So, yeah, Twitter, we miss
You're
that.
You're like, we don't do Twitter.
Yeah, we don't do Twitter. That's for the young and fun.
Really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. You can email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And let's just go ahead and I'll jump into highlights really quick. There's a few things I want to highlight, and let me see. So the first thing I want to highlight is Open Mic Night, which is hosted by Dela of Musical Pleasure for the Masses at Trans Am. It's the first and third Friday of every month, so it's going to be on the 21st this week. And it's free, so go ahead. If you have any talent, you can go ahead and go in there and showcase yourself, or if you want to watch anyone local. The second event I wanted to highlight was DJ Paul Bearer is having a Rude Night at Yucca Tap Room. It's Friday 9/21, so that's September 21st. I'm like, gosh, we're already in September. And that's actually every third Friday. It's 21 plus at 10 p.m., and it's like ska, reggae, rocksteady, and mod music. And is there anything you wanted to highlight, Dario?
Yeah, actually, we have an in-store coming up. Actually, this is kind of a double event. We've got an in-store on October 13th. With Gabriella Cohen, who is an Australian. She's from, I was going to say Melbourne, but I don't want to mess that up. She's from Australia. Amazing artist. She's on tour with King Khan, but they agreed to come and do an in-store in Stinkweeds with a full band. So also on that day is Cassette Store Day. Yes, that is a thing. So Cassette Store Day, it's like Record Store Day where there's like exclusive releases, but all about cassettes. So one thing we're doing for the Gabriella Cohen in-store, we're going to be doing a digital recording of it, which we'll be putting to video and putting that online, but we're also doing a direct to cassette recording of the band's performance, which will be given away immediately after the show. We're going to hit stop, eject, and give that tape to one lucky winner at the show. So they will get an exclusive Stinkweeds Cassette Store Day.
One of a kind,
limited
basically.
To one cassette.
Is there anything you're going to pick up on Cassette Store Day, or anything that you can, that right now just sticks
out
in your
mind? I haven't even had a chance to think about what I do occasionally listen to cassettes. I will say that's not my main form of listening, but yeah, there might be something that I would be into.
That you'll see and you're like, yeah. Oh, I'll get that. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like fun. So, yeah.
And we'll go into pickups. Andrew, do you have any, have you picked up anything?
I actually got a few 45s from here at Sneakweeds.
Nice.
That's right. You did Coal Mine?
A couple Coal Mines and a couple Daptones.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And some Obscures.
Obscures. Stuff that was alphabetized into obscurity. I actually just got some 12s from Grand. And then my daughter actually picked up my, because my daughter collects cassettes. Mm.
Nice. nice.
It's cheaper than records, so
that's a good reason to buy them.
Exactly. So, but it was "Baby, You Got It" by Bretton Wood. So she was been dying for.
That's
a
right. They just reissued those.
I didn't even know that, and I went back there and I looked at the wall and I saw that, and I was like, I can't leave here without it. And I went home and gave it to her, and she was all happy. So thanks, Dinkweeds. Nice. And what about you, Dario? Have you picked up anything?
Yeah. Speaking of Bretton Wood, I just bought a 7-inch. I can't remember which song it was because I was just too excited. So I'm like, I'm buying this. Yeah. But other than that, recently I bought and have been listening to the new John Coltrane release, where, for those who don't know, they found an album that was recorded by John Coltrane and the, like, basically at the height of his career, some would say, with, you know, this amazing group of musicians. It was, I want to say, like, mid-60s era, but it's amazing. Like, a lot of, I think there's maybe two songs on there that he ended up re-recording for another album, but everything else, new songs, have never been released. Really good stuff. That Mira's got a new album. I've been loving Mira's music for a very long time. Anna Calvi, who I think this is maybe her third or fourth album, but yeah, very kind of has like a real kind of Nick Cave kind of vibe to her, but she's got a new album out that's really good.
See, I've never even heard of that, but I'm now going to have to check that out now that you said that.
That's my job.
Girl, this is literally what I do.
Telling people what they don't know.
And Andrew, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So, as we always do with our guests, do you know the number one song on the date of your birth?
I do not. Man.
Just take a wild guess.
Is it a disco song?
I'm not really sure, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It is Gloria Gaynor.
Disco?
I Will Survive.
Yeah. All right, that is a disco song. That is the disco song.
That is
song.
Very good disco
yeah,
song.
That is very disco.
I know it was a disco song. I was trying to throw him off the scent.
That was on my birthday.
He's all like, right. Hey, I actually know.
That's an omen of good fortune, I guess. I Will Survive.
There you go.
And we also do... the song that's supposed to define your life is when you were 14 years old.
The number one song on your 14th birthday.
Yeah. So okay. And the number. So I always do the top five because I always like to, see them.
Yeah.
Some people know it was 1993. So it was, Jade, Don't Walk Away, was number five.
I had that CD.
That's a good song.
Yep.
Okay.
Whitney Houston, I Have Nothing, was number four.
I think my mom had that one, but I didn't have that one.
Dr. Dre, Nothing But a G Thing,
oh,
was number three.
You know I had that.
Everyone.
My mom took that album from me, and I thought I was a little badass. I was like, you owe me $14. She's like, what? Nothing. Yeah, no, that's a classic. That came out on my birthday.
Yeah, that was number three.
Number three
on your birthday.
I just got a whole lot cooler.
on your 14th birthday.
My 14th birthday.
Number two was Silk, Freak Me.
I had that album. I had that cassette.
And number one was Snow, Informer.
Oh, my. I'm sorry.
I had that CD. Also... I went and saw Snow play at Castles and Coasters. He did a free show at Castles and Coasters. I was super not into his live performance, so I took that opportunity to ride the roller coaster as much as I could because everyone was just watching Snow. But, yeah, he did a free show at
did
Castles
you ride
and Coasters.
The Desert Storm or the Junior roller coaster?
Oh, come on. How old was I? I was 14 years old. You know I was on the Desert Storm.
So for those who don't know, Castles and Coasters is like a mini theme park here in Phoenix.
Yeah, it's a regional mini theme park here in Phoenix.
And the big roller coaster that they have, I did my air quotes, is called the Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know, Castles and Coasters is still hanging in there.
I'm amazed it's still there. Yeah.
Have you been to the arcade?
When was the last time I went there?
I'm pretty sure it's probably the same since the last time.
Yeah, no,
you went there.
I was there. I want to say maybe like within the last like 5 years. I think my girlfriend, who's a teacher, she took her kids on a field trip there, and I went as a chaperone. And yeah, I mean, as a chaperone, but mainly because I just wanted to go to Castles and Coasters.
It was
again.
An excuse.
Yeah, did you exactly. ride the Desert Storm?
I did.
Did you blast Informer?
I did. Always.
Now I know every time I listen to that song, I have to put it on full blast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you hear it, you're going to have that's your jam.
Right, Dre.
Okay, Dario. So I want to get a little bit on your background. So are you from here? Were you born here?
I was born here, yeah. Born and raised Phoenix, Arizona.
and
a rare thing.
Well, so was I actually.
Oh, awesome.
So I'm born and he's not. Well, he's raised, but not born.
We always like to try to find as many Phoenicians as we can.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've got a long history of Arizona relatives.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same with me. So you were born here, and were you always involved, like, from a young age? Like, so growing up, did your parents listen to music? Was it, like, a thing with your family or anything like that?
Yeah. Both of my parents, like, my mom, like I said, you know, she probably had that Whitney Houston album. She was, you know, disco, Motown, all the good stuff. She was into songs. She was into, you know, good songs, a lot of the hits, things like that. My dad, on the other hand, was into just some of the weirdest shit. Like, he was basically, like, I have memories, very, you know, vivid memories of Saturday mornings. He would wake me up, because he would work nights, so I usually wouldn't see him during the weekday. I wouldn't see him that much. So on Saturday morning, he'd wake me up super early and say, come in the living room. I'm like, all right. So I just wrap my blanket around, go lie on the couch at like 7 o'clock in the morning. And he would put on just some of the weirdest shit. And, you know, as a kid, you're just like, what? Why am I here? But the cool thing was, he would explain what it was. He would talk to me about the music, because he knew. Like, you know, you can't just play, you know, just some, like you can't play, like, Pharoah Saunders, like, some weird free jazz for a kid. And he's going to be like, oh, this is cool. Like, you have to explain it to him. So he would explain that to me. And it would, you know, at times it would really translate for whatever reason. So that was, I think that was like the beginning of the way that I listen to music, which is, like, I don't necessarily listen to songs. I don't necessarily listen to lyrics. I'm kind of just listening for what's going on in the music part of it.
Like, is it more like a feeling aspect, do you think? Or?
That's a big part of it, yeah. And just kind of like maybe looking a little deeper into music. I remember being in high school and, you know, kind of, you know, all my friends were listening to pop punk and things like that. And I just remembered not really getting into it. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Not that there's anything wrong with any top 40 music on the radio. It's all music is great. But just having come up in that environment, it was this weird thing where I just, like, unless there was something really weird going on, I just couldn't relate to it. It was really bizarre.
So your dad kind of, even he kind of shaped the way you looked at music, right? Because it's like he, like, so would he tell you, like, to listen to, like, oh, listen to the horns and, like, really, like, hone in on what was going on?
Yeah, it was really, you know, he would explain, you know, if we'd listen to, like, a free jazz album, I remember one, I think it was, like, Pharoah Saunders and John Coltrane, like, he would talk to me about the conversation that they're having, because normally you'd listen to something like that and you would just hear them making noise. But he would explain, like, they're having a conversation. You'll hear this person will say something with his instrument, and then the other person will respond. And at times they're arguing, and sometimes, you know, it's a quiet conversation, and sometimes it's a loud conversation. So, yeah, just a different way of looking at music, and especially instrumental music, things like that. But he was also really into a lot of, like, South American music. I remember a lot of, like, Brazilian music growing up. Really into African music as well. And this was something I remember. He woke up again Saturday morning, going to the living room, and he's playing this music that's like African percussion. And he tells me, he's like, this is a post office in Africa. And my dad worked at the post office. And I was like, okay. But, you know, it got my interest because, like, oh, my dad works at the post office. This is a recording of a post office. I thought it was a recording of people playing drums in a post office. He said, no, this is how a post office operates. This is how this post office operates in Africa. And you listen to it and it just sounds like percussion. Like, it's those really weird polyrhythmic percussions that they do, but it was them stamping, filing things away, like loading up barrels. Like, they were, that's how that place operated. And that was just really amazing to me that, you know, there were other cultures out there that were living music. It wasn't even that they listened to music. That's the way they operate. That's the way they do their job, is musically.
It's so rhythmic, like, yeah. Everything's rhythmic. So I've honestly never heard of that. Sounds so interesting. Do you know, like, is that an album?
It was a compilation. I can't remember what it was. I'll find it for you, but yeah, I can't remember.
So, and that was like around like from your teenage or like your preteen years?
That was probably like preteen years, yeah.
That's not interesting because I think it's always, we always say like our parents are in a way, like if your parents listen to any music, whether it was top 40 or jazz or oldies or whatever it is, it's like they're kind of like your foundation a lot of times, and like they really frame you, and sometimes you don't realize it till later on in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, I could say that for the music that my mother listened to, like, it, you know, growing up, I think there was this, like, that was my rebellion. Like, I didn't really rebel against my parents, but I think I just rebelled against being a cool kid, which is just like, I'm just gonna listen to weird stuff and whatever and just embrace it. But I think like later on when I started to really appreciate songs and appreciate things like that, that's where my mother's taste kind of came into it, you know. And you know, as much as anybody else, I'm a huge fan of soul music, huge fan of funk, you know, like a lot of the Stax record stuff, things like that. But yeah, I think a lot of that came from what she was listening to. So yeah, so it's kind of this weird mix now where I do enjoy a great song, but I also enjoy when, you know, somebody's just making a bunch of noise. Sometimes they combine the two, too, exactly, and that's all the better.
So, yeah. So what kind of stuff did you start kind of discovering on your own?
What did I start discovering? It wasn't till really later, like in my, like maybe late teens, early 20s, that I really started to just try to find what it is that I wanted to listen to. There were things, you know, in high school and a little bit after high school that like friends were into, and I was like, oh, that's cool, I'll listen to that, I'll buy that album. But as far as like finding my own identity, yeah, that really came a little bit later. And yeah, I just started gravitating towards you know, a little bit of folk music, which is another thing, like both my parents enjoyed that. So a little bit of that, you know, again with like African music, I was finding like newer bands doing that. And then, you know, it started responding a little more to rock bands, but the ones that were maybe a little bit on the weirder side. Like I remember, you know, being like 19 and hearing like Modest Mouse and just thinking like that's really weird what they're doing. So yeah, just things like that, where basically like I started to explore a lot of different genres of music, but within those genres, I would always look for what is that?
The weirdest part of the genre.
Yeah. Well, I had a friend describe my taste once, and I just love the way he put it. He says, "You like a pebble in your shoe," which is perfect. Like it basically, like I like all kinds of music, but I like for there to be an element that's maybe a little bit uncomfortable or something you kind of have to, you just have to work with it in
like
some way.
You have to grow to like really maybe like understand it in a way, like yeah, appreciate it.
Or like someone's tone and their voice. Like, cause
that could be part of it, yeah, absolutely.
I was listening to a record not too long ago. I'm like, I just can't get into this record. Mm-hmm. This guy's voice is just like, it just doesn't, yeah. I don't feel it. But I'm like, it's a really good song.
Yeah.
But this guy's voice is just, I'm just not feeling it.
No, I get that. That's something that where there are a lot of musicians I listen to, a lot of singers I listen to, where I hear that said about them. And I always say, like, I totally get it, you know? It's like someone saying they, you know, they don't like pickles. Like, yeah, I get it, but I love pickles. You know? So yeah, like,
wait, before you go on, I have to ask you, what is your preferred pickle?
Oh man, okay. A dear friend of mine introduced me to a company called Wickles, the Wickedly Delicious Pickle. It's like a spicy sweet pickle. It's so good, you can't find it anywhere. It's really good stuff.
We're gonna have to look that.
Yeah,
find those Wickles. Have to find, yeah, because yeah, I mean, everyone has like the Mount Olive lastic.
Yeah.
Argument, but I was like, you know, it's just a pickle to me. To me,
no, but my brother, he's 19, and he loves pickles. Like, he just, and then he's like, there's nothing like the good crunch of a blast.
Oh yeah.
Sort of thing.
Like, I had a pickle today. Yeah, I had a pickle today. I had a sandwich with a pickle. Yeah.
You can't go wrong.
Yeah. See how many times we can say pickle on this podcast.
I know, right? We're like, we talk about
this
pickles.
Is the Pickle Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Jesus Christ. So we were saying, Mr. Pickle Andrew.
I'm sorry. Moving on to like when your teen years, like what were you listening to during that time period?
So I would say my favorite things in my teen year, like high school teen years, that I often didn't share with other people. I loved Paul Simon. Oh. I loved the Talking Heads. And Charles Mingus, jazz musician, and I've got a fun story about that. I actually took a girl out on a date when I was probably my senior year, and I just had, you know, Charles Mingus in my CD player, and it was on when she got in the car, and I didn't think about it because I listened to that all the time. But Charles Mingus is pretty weird. It's like weird jazz. And she goes, "What is this?" And my reaction to that was, "Oh, she likes what I'm listening to. She wants to know about this music." So I just start like talking about Charles Mingus, like, "Oh, aww, it's great. It's this and that." And she just responds with, "Do you have any dance music?" So, yeah. And that's been the rest of my life.
No, that's the theme of my life.
Yeah.
So you've always been informing people about music and they don't.
If someone seems excited about it, I will be happy to tell them about it, which, yeah, I guess that's why I've been at a record store for 15 years of my life. But, yeah, no, that's I like when there is that connection. But I learned pretty early on that connection, like I can't expect people to be into what I listen to. And that's something, you know, working at a record store, I've found that when somebody asked me, What have you been listening to, or what should I listen to? My question is always, what have you been listening to? I always ask them, what are you looking for? I want to find out what they're looking for. Because, you know, if I start rattling off some weird stuff, I'm going to lose them. Or maybe not, but I don't want to take that chance. I want to get to know them before I start telling them about what I'm into. And if there happens to be some common ground, all the better. You know, we can then talk about music. We can talk about these things. I could talk about seeing that band live. But yeah, it's you know, I don't think anybody really likes to just be told, you know,
like
you should listen to this. Yeah, like you should listen to this. Like, I think everybody wants to be heard, and everybody wants to know that this person cares about their taste, because that's a huge problem. And I won't get into the, maybe I will, but you know, I think that's a huge problem. You know, if we're talking about like, you know, gender relations in that too, where it's like, you know, there are these stereotypes that like women don't listen to music, or women don't buy records, things like that.
Or that they only listen to certain things. Him and I have this discussion like not on the podcast all the time. And I always tell him too, which we're going to do episode on as in the future, that women are not respected and they're highly underappreciated. Mm. Like the content that they create, it's like, a lot of people are just like, oh, well, yeah, that's just this or that. But they're not really like looking into it. And that a lot of time a woman has to create something like so amazing. Like, let me think, like, okay, Lauryn Hill with Miseducation. Like, that's like a landmark album. But it's like, that's so like amazing and just so good. And it's one of those things that you can never replicate. But she had to do something like so much above everybody else to even just be recognized. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's like him and I have this discussion all the
time.
When
we do record that episode, I will not be on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we live and we learn. But no, that's like, speaking about like that stereotype of women not listening to music, I've kind of realized that I think it's because, and I've seen this a million times, where if oftentimes when a guy is talking to a woman about music, it's like he's just kind of like forcing it on them. Just like, you, like, oh, you got to listen to this. Oh, you listen
like
to that.
Hammering
no, you
it
should,
in.
Yeah, like you should listen to this. Like, oh, you don't. Oh, you like that band? That band sucks. Like, I've seen that firsthand so many times that I get it. I get why, you know, we'll see this, and it breaks my heart every time. But we'll have couples walk in and the wife will look around and say like, oh, okay, you shop here. I'm going to go somewhere else. You know, and it's this thing of like,
you just stay, there's something in here for you too.
I mean, and it's not my place to tell them what to do or how to shop or anything, but it's I think that it's an unfortunate thing. I've lost track of what I was talking about originally.
No, it's okay. So we were talking about how, like, when you went on your date and you had Charles Mingus on, and chick was just kind of like, okay, well, I just want to listen to dance music.
She was being square.
She thought you were being square, but she was really being square. But it's just like the open-mindedness, like you're saying, and you were so excited to share that connection, but it wasn't exactly what you thought it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, so I guess the main point of that is that I don't, like, getting back to what I was saying, I just don't like to, you know, I know that I'm in a position of authority, being like working at a record store,
being behind the counter.
Yeah, I'm behind the counter, but I don't want to take advantage of that in a way where I'm, you know, telling people, oh, you should listen to this. Like, no, I want to, and this is something that, you know, I like to say that, like, Spotify doesn't know what kind of day you're having. You know, like, if somebody comes in here and they want to talk about music, I want to get down to, yeah, down to, like, what kind of day are you having? Like, what, you know, what are all the elements that are going to lead to us finding the perfect album for you, or the thing that you really want to hear right now? And what it's not going to be is what I've been listening to, because that has nothing to do with that person. We're all individuals, and, yeah, I think people need to, you know, they want to be heard when they talk about music. They don't want to just be told.
Well, it's just, like, even, like, we read, like, comics and stuff, too, and we have completely different tastes in comics, but I don't know if you read comics or you're into anything like that.
No, I regret that I never got into them. I wish
it's
I had.
It's never too late.
I know. I've jumped into a couple of things.
So, like, yeah. One of our favorite comic book stores is Drawn to Comics in Glendale, and the owner of the shop, I believe his name is Ken, and he's a really nice guy. But he's that type, too, where he's like, I'm working behind the counter, and I'm the owner, but if you come into my shop, I'm not going to tell you, oh, these are the best comics, or this is what I like. He says, what's your favorite TV show? What's this and that? And he really knows his stuff, so he's able to gear you towards something that you'll probably like, and then that's the gateway into other things eventually. Yeah. And music's the same way,
yeah,
in
like
a sense.
Sommeliers of taste. You know, we want to, we're pairing our product with your life, not just, you know, like, we're not just trying to
listen to this.
Yeah, we're not just trying to sell you on something because it's good. We want to sell you on something because it's the thing that you want.
So did you, in high school, did you ever play music?
Not in high school. Actually, I was in choir and a little bit of drama in high school. Like, acting.
I was
drama.
In
like,
choir, too.
Yeah. No, I was a choir nerd all through, like, grade school and then all the way into high school. And, you know, I did the musicals and I was in the jazz choir and all that. Like I said, I was a big nerd and still am to this day. But so that was basically, like, my music world in high school. And that's why I say, like, it wasn't until after that I started to kind of discover my own taste and discover the things that really that I responded to. But I think that even though, you know, I wasn't playing guitar and I wasn't, you know, doing the things that most kids do when they get into bands later in life, but yeah, I think it really kind of that as well set the stage for the kind of music that I was going to be into, the kind of music that I was going to play later on. And it didn't fit pop formats. It wasn't responding to whatever, you know, the popular music of the day was. It was more just timeless music, classic music.
And I think choir is an interesting thing because, too, myself, I didn't play any. Well, in fourth grade, I played, like, the trumpet, and then we moved and couldn't afford it, so I couldn't play it anymore. But I was basically always in choir as well, and I felt like it gives you a different appreciation of music because you really do get to kind of understand certain, like, the layers and the elements and, like, sometimes how difficult things really are vocally or, like, how much it really takes, and it kind of makes you step back and think about that. Like, Andrew was the opposite. He was more, like, he played music.
Yeah.
But so he always, like, he's obsessed with horns, right? You're yeah. And yeah. Bass
nothing,
bass lines.
Nothing good than a good bass line and a dope horn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's like if you play, you know, in a rock band or if you play in a band, like you gravitate towards instruments that cut through. Whereas if you're in a choir, it's more about this kind of like blending. Like you just want to kind of blend in with everybody else. So yeah, it is kind of a different world in that way. But yeah, that's something I've had to learn. I had to learn that as a musician that, you know, there is a place for me to cut through and be louder and be the featured instrument. Like I was in a band. The first band I ever started that was, you know, I was writing the songs. I was the front man. I used to stand off to the side. We would be in like a half moon and I would be at the side and my entire band was like, dude, you got to stand in the middle. Like you're the singer. Like you got to be in the middle. And I just kept saying like, no, we're equals. Like I want us all
to
be
the choir
featured.
Mentality.
Exactly.
Yes,
it's a choir mentality. Yeah. So it took a little while for me to realize like, okay, I'll be the front man. And, you know, I basically, that's where my drama skills came into play because then I had to pretend to be something else. So, yeah, so I would kind of, you know, get in character. Like if I was going to perform a show, I had to pretend like I was a front man.
And how old were you, like around what Like, what year, how old were you?
That was very recently. Like, that's a band that, you know, we haven't done anything in, like, a year. But, yeah, we've basically, like, it's my most recent band. Yeah.
And really quick, so you went throughout high school. And then, so when were records, like, a thing to you? Did your parents have records?
Yeah, my parents had records. Records have always been a thing for me. There was never a point where I was like, I'm gonna get into records. Like, it's just, they were always there. You know, even when I moved out of my parents' house, I always had a record player, and it wasn't, I don't know, it was never really an option to not have a record player for me, because that's, you know, a lot of my music I had on vinyl. Of course, there were the ones that I stole from my parents. That happens. I actually have a blog post about that I wrote on Father's Day. It was, let's talk about the albums I stole from my dad. it's, you know, that's how I listen to music. And I remember having experiences watching, you know, my parents put records on and just, you know, being amazed by that. And that stuck with me. And I haven't let go of it yet. That's mostly how I listen to music at home.
So what was the actual first record that you bought yourself?
Oh, man. Like on vinyl?
What was like the first album or even single, whatever, that you just remember purchasing with your own money?
It was probably like a Weird Al cassette or something like that. It was, or like, you know, like Boys to Men, Coolie High Harmony or something like that.
That's a classic.
Yeah. That would have come later. Like, I don't think anybody was buying Weird Al and Boys to Men. But no, I think it was, you know, I know I bought some like Michael Jackson CDs when I was younger. And I don't know. I don't really, I'm terrible at reminiscing. I don't have much of a memory stuff.
That's like, some people just don't remember. But like you're saying, it's because it's always been in your life. So it's really hard to pinpoint it. It really is. It's not like it was around when you were younger and it kind of just died out and then you got into it. Like you're saying, it's just always been around you.
Yeah. And, I live nearby where Christown Mall, I lived nearby Christown Mall, and there was a Tower Records, like, which is now a park and ride for the light rail. Mm-hmm. There was a Tower Records there. And, that was like a 5-minute walk from my house. So, you know, I spent a lot of time there and spent a lot of time at the library, like checking out records and cassettes and things like that.
So did you go to any other record stores besides Tower, like when you were younger?
When I was younger, I don't have much of a memory. I know like later on I started shopping at Zia. Where else? At Tracks and Wax, I'd go in there. I went to Central High, so, you know, I'd go into Tracks and Wax every now and then. But I don't know. Probably just kind of stopped into a lot of little random places.
Yeah, like if you saw something, you're just like, oh, but you're saying Tower was so close.
Yeah, Tower was close. It's just convenient. I mean, that was more when I was buying, you know, cassettes and CDs and things like that. But it's wherever. Yeah.
I know. Did you watch that documentary on Tower?
I haven't watched that yet. I really want to. But
it's good.
Yeah, it's on my huge list of things that I meant to watch but never have.
That's us. We have like a whole list of like shows and all this other stuff, but we have so much going on we just never have
time. Yeah.
So how did you start working at Stinkweeds? Because I know it used to be, I know it's moved about 3 times, right? And mm-hmm. It used to be in the Far East Valley.
Yeah, when I got the job at Stinkweeds, like I had worked at Zia for 3 years. I started there, I want to say maybe when I was like 19 years old, and then briefly worked at Circles, which is now gone forever. But when I got the job at Stinkweeds, I'll be honest, I had just recently started shopping at Stinkweeds because they had opened the Phoenix location, which, you know, I never made it out to Tempe. I was never out there for any reason. So I had never gone to the earlier Stinkweeds before I had gone to the Phoenix store, which is the one we're in now. So I happened to be in Tempe for some reason, and I think I bought a Joanna Newsom CD, because like I had gone to see Bonnie Prince Billy at Rhythm Room, and Joanna Newsom opened up for him. I was just like, what is this? This is the weirdest stuff ever. I love it. Went into the Tempe Stinkweeds. They had it, which I was just like, oh yeah, this is that kind of record store. And then I think I may have just like asked if they were hiring. I'm not sure where I was in my life at the time, but I think I just asked, and you know, Kimber gave me an interview, and I think something she liked was that, you know, I I had an emphasis on customer service. I told her that when I got the job at Zia, it's because I remember going into Zia and always I was always looking for the person that I could have that conversation with about music, and I couldn't find them. So I decided I'll just be that person. I'll get a job here and I'll be the person that covers that area of music. So I think she appreciated that, you know, that I wasn't getting into it for cool points, obviously. I wanted to do it because I liked talking about music. So.
Yeah, and I feel like that is a big part of the Stinkweed's identity, whether it was, like, it seems like Kimber from, like, just, you know, you talk to people when you record shop, you meet, you know, different individuals. And that's what people always say, like, that Stinkweed's has always been kind of there for, like, it has something for everybody, but it's just, like, it has that personableness to it, mm-hmm. and that, like, about the customer service and just how if you really want to open up and expand your palate, you can come in here and ask, and you'll definitely be able to get suggestions.
Yeah, this isn't the kind of store that, you know, we can't criticize people who come in here who don't want the stuff that we sell, because, like, why are we selling it in the first place? We're selling it because we love these artists. We love the labels that we work with. We want people to buy this music. So if we just relied on the handful of people that knew about this stuff from, you know, reading about it in a magazine or whatever, like, we wouldn't have much business. And, yeah, we would just be written off as the snobby indie store. And, you know, we like to think of ourselves, we're the friendly indie store. Like, yeah, you're going to come in, you're going to be a little confused by a lot of the bands that we carry, but we are more than happy to help people find what they're looking for, because we think it's great. We think the more people that listen to it, the better.
Well, yeah, because I even noticed, like, people outside of Arizona, they'll know about Stinkweed's, and I'll even ask them, like, oh, do you know any record stores, you know, here in Arizona? And they're like, well, I've heard of this one called Stinkweed's, mm-hmm. and not to knock any of the other record stores here,
not at all.
But there's a reason why you guys are kind of known outside of just Arizona, even though you're a smaller independent store.
Yeah, we would like to think that, you know, we leave an impression on people, but yeah, it's not for me to say.
I'm not trying to brag, yeah, but if I have to, I will.
I've just been calling myself a nerd for the last few minutes.
Yeah, so, but, and you guys, I feel like you guys have a really, like, pretty consistent customer base, I guess you can say.
Yeah, I mean, we have loyal customers that have been with us since the beginning, but lately, yeah, we've just been seeing so many new faces, and again, that's that thing where, you know, vinyl records have kind of made a comeback in a way. You know, if we just were focused on just the things that we think people should listen to, you know, we wouldn't be a very welcoming place for people that are looking for, you know, the whatever's a little more popular. So we kind of expanded our selection a little bit, started carrying a little more things that we didn't used to carry because we never really saw a reason to, because you had Zia Records, you had all these other record stores that would carry, you know, they had a much bigger store and a much bigger selection, so you can go in there and you can find your Journey record or Boston or whatever. So that's something we had to kind of expand our selection because we were seeing so many new
faces. The demand is there for it.
Yeah, and it, you know, I wouldn't even say it was about demand. It was just, you know, about being welcoming, being someplace that someone can come in and be excited to see something that they know, and then maybe that'll spark up a conversation, like, about a newer band that, you know, there are tons of new bands that are basically pulling from classic rock. So it's great that if somebody buys that, you know, that classic rock album, we could say, oh, you should check out this band. Like, they're huge fans of the thing that you're buying. Also, they're going to be playing at a small venue in town, which I think that's always a good pull for people too. Like, that's one reason I tell people, like, you know, we should try to break outside of the older music for that reason, that you can experience it in a different way. You can experience the influence that band had on newer bands.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because I noticed there's obviously, like, right now there's a huge, I mean, it's always been there, but there's definitely, I feel like, especially right now, a really big resurgence on the modern soul thing. Mm-hmm. And some people still don't know that there's modern soul, that they're still thinking that this is, like, dead. It's just not being made anymore. But a lot of times I'll see people and they're like, oh, I'm looking for this. Like, I'll just be digging. Because I'm a weirdo, too, and I'll just randomly talk to people in the record store. Like, if I overhear them, like, oh, I'm looking for this. And then I'll be like, like, they'll be like, oh, they don't have it. And I'll be like, well, and like, I don't even work there, so I'm not even getting paid to do this. I just really like sharing with people.
You're our
and
favorite
connecting.
Kind of customer. When you do
I'm
that,
the annoying customer.
I go in the back and take a nap when that kind of customer's here.
So, like, but I'll, like, suggest, like, if they're talking about, like, soul, and I'll be like, okay, like, a good modern soul artist to start with that a lot of people know in the modern soul community, but a lot of people don't know is, like, Duran Jones, for instance.
Absolutely.
Like, and obviously he's influenced by all the old school stuff. And it's just like, you'd just be surprised, because so I think so many people get stuck in their bubble and say, like, well, everybody knows that. And it's like, actually, no, like, it's impossible to know everything.
It's yeah, it's amazing how big the world of music is. And I think it's hard for most people to understand that, because the music industry has made it as small as they possibly can, because that's how you sell albums. That's how you
that's top 40.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's Clear Channel.
All that. They that's part of their business model, is we have a handful of bands. We want you to spend your money on those bands. So, you know, if you listen to the radio, even, you know, even Spotify playlists oftentimes are just going to be kind of whatever, you know, most people are listening to. But man, it's a huge world of music. So, you know, I think that's why we often get confused looks when people come in here and they just see things that they're not familiar with. It's like, you know, a lot of times that's part of it, is it's kind of breaking down this idea of what the world of music is. And, you know, and it's our job to kind of, like, I don't know, catch them as they're falling from that. Because it can be a scary, intimidating thing. And then you think to yourself, well, I have a hard enough time finding the bands that I do like in this smaller world, you know, now it's going to be that much harder to find them in this bigger world. But it's not, you know, and that's where taste comes in. You just, you know, you figure out what it is that you like. And, you know, once you find a few things, it's much easier to find those avenues to find the stuff that you like.
I mean, it's true. There is a lot of, because like we always talk about, one of the reasons for the podcast is to get, like, to kind of, like, and it's not even that we're doing anything like crazy or special, but to really let people know, especially if they're like newer collectors, that like, don't, if someone's like shaming or like elitist, just ignore them. Like, you're gonna run into people like that, but there's so many other people out there that aren't like it. So that's like what I was saying before, when I go into a store and if I do see somebody, I always try to be like inviting, so at least they can have like that positive interaction. Because if they go into any record store anywhere and they have a negative interaction, even if it's not with the person working there and it's just with someone in the store, that really turns them off and they might not ever come back.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's, you know, to be part of that welcoming environment. That's why you go to record stores, I'm sure. Like, you go there because it is a community. There is a sense of community there. So to contribute to that, that's a great thing. And I appreciate it.
Thank you. We try.
Yeah, we try.
We really do try. That's what people are like, no, we try.
That's all you got to do.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with buying top 40 records. Yeah. I mean, especially because, like you said, there's a resurgence with records. And it's really important that whatever you're buying, it's you know, whether it goes to the artist or whatever it may be. But it's just, it really, it's like a gateway for you to get into something else, or to be drawn into a different record store, or to be drawn into a store like this, and then you can talk to them, and then they can get them more into different types of music, so they can expand their palette. Mm-hmm. But I had my question to you is, how often do you see people come in here, and they just kind of flip around and they just like leave, like, and how does it make you feel? Like,
so we like to think that we're pretty good at catching people before they go, because I think some people have a hard time like asking for things, maybe because they don't know how we're going to react to it. They may think that we're going to be judgmental. There's no employee handbook for Stinkweeds. There's no thing that tells you how to behave with people. Basically, the way we see it, like, we hire, like, Kimber, Lindsay, they hire people who they know are going to be good people. But with that said, nobody walks out that door without us asking them, hey, was there anything you were looking for? You know, could we help you find something? And it's amazing how many times someone, you know, the conversation may even start with like, oh, I was looking for something, but you didn't have it. And like, well, people say, well, what was it? And, you know, even if we don't have that thing that they're looking for, that could spark up that conversation. It's amazing how many times somebody is about to walk out the door and we stop them and then they're here for another half an hour. Like that's a big part of it, is letting people know, like, we're here to help, you know, we're not here to judge you. We're not, you know, and if we don't have something, you know, that's another thing too, is that like the internet, with all the wonderful things it has given us, it has kind of made people a little impatient and a little like they kind of expect
the instant gratification.
Yeah, instant gratification. So, you know, there are a lot of times where people will be a little disappointed because we didn't have something, because they're used to, I want this thing. There it is. Click. It's mine. You know, tomorrow it'll be here. Whereas a record store, you know, that's, you know, I'm not trying to like tell anyone how to, you know, how to shop or anything like that. But, you know, there is this sense of like it's a continuing relationship, and you may come in and you may not find the thing that you're looking for, but you might find something else. You know, that's, you know, I like to make that analogy of the relationship with music, because in a relationship, it takes you putting in some effort. It's not all about just get. You have to give a little. But there are rewards to that as well. And, you know, part of that is the community. Part of that is, you know, honing your taste, figuring out like, these are the things that I like. If you go on an online service and you hit a button and it's just telling you what you like, you're less likely to even think about what you're listening to.
Or if you actually really like it or not.
Yeah. That's another thing too, is like, you may listen to something and in the back of your head, you're like, I really like this. But at no point do you look at your phone or computer to figure out what it is or write it down. Like that's something we see a lot too, where people will, you know, come in and like, oh, I heard something on Spotify. It was really amazing. It sounded like this, like, but I don't know what the name of it was. And, you know, no judgment, but I'm thinking, why didn't you write down that name? And the reason they didn't write that down the name is because they weren't invested in that experience of listening. So you come into a record store, you're much more invested in that process of listening to music. And, you know, I like to go into the long spiel of it, where you drive to a record store, you drive through traffic, you're using gas in your car, it's 110 degrees outside. You come into the record store, you have to go through all these records, all these different titles. Some of them you know, some of them you don't know. Some things you're like, oh, maybe I want that. Maybe not. I'll choose between this and that. So there's all these, this process.
You bargain with yourself. You're like, should I have this? Should I not? Should
yeah,
I this
exactly. Bag? Yeah. You know, you make your selections. You come up to the counter. You have to deal with me rambling on about things forever. You pay for it with the money that you worked hard for. You take it home. You shield it from the heat. Like it's your child's. you take it home, you know, you alphabetize it in there, then someday you go and you pick that record out again amongst a bunch of records. You take it out of the sleeve. If you're like me, you clean it before and after playing it. You play it, and if you're like me, you live in a really old house with old wood floors, and you have to tiptoe to the chair to make sure that record doesn't skip. After all of that, tell me that you're not going to listen to that album. Tell me that you're not going to really hear what that music is saying. And then you're also holding that cover in your hand. You know, that's an investment. That's love. That's a relationship. You're really investing in an experience, and you're going to get so much more out of it. You know, how often do people do nothing but listen to music? You know, I think that's kind of a lost art form these days, where even at concerts, like it's, like you go to a concert, and I'm going to get started on this. You go to a concert and you see people on their phones or having conversations. Like so many people in the audience are doing that, where even at a live show, you can't just listen to music. And I think it's because we've conditioned ourselves to be doing other things while we're listening to music, because we've tried to make it convenient. It shouldn't be convenient. It's something that you love. Anything you love shouldn't be convenient. Relationships, movies, food, books, anything that people say that they love, they are willing to put in an effort for it. And music, for whatever reason, has become the one thing that people say they love, that they just want it to be easy and available and ready.
Like disposable.
Disposable, yeah. Even. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how often do people get into bands and then the next year they're just not into that band anymore, or they don't even remember the band?
Yeah, what's funny that you mentioned that at live shows, Because, you know, when I go, when we both go to live shows, we don't really take pictures or maybe have one video. But how often do these people, just anybody, any folks out there, take pictures, take videos to post them, and they just stay on your phone, just taking up space?
Yeah. It drives, and I'm not trying to be elitist, but that literally drives me insane. Like, one time, you know, I know you know who the Postal Service is, I'm assuming, right? Okay, so did you see them when they came through here?
I didn't.
Okay, we went to see them, and it's like, obviously a once-in-a-lifetime thing. They did the one tour. They were never going to tour again. It was like, whatever. So anyways, we're there, and I'll never forget, because this chick was distracting me, and she was with her friend. So I'm like, at least if you're going to be, like, disruptive, at least be having a conversation with your friend. But she was on her phone, and her screen was so bright, and I could see her because she's like right next to me, and I'm like listening to the band and getting into it, and like she was kind of dancing around, but the whole time she was looking at her phone, and then I would see she would put it away, and then she'd take it out, and then I'm like, dang, she must keep getting notifications. So I was nosy, I'm not gonna lie, and I looked to my left, and there was no notifications on her phone. She was just so into the habit of.
Can I ask a question about that? Did you happen to notice this may not go into my theory, but did you happen to notice that she would take her phone out really intense parts of the music?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to talk about my theory.
I want to hear this.
Let's hear this theory.
So I don't think it has anything to do with social media. I don't think it has anything to do with capturing a memory. You know, all the things that, you know, people might say they're doing that. I'm being a little judgy, and I hate that, but I'm just going to go with it. I think what it is that we have this, like, Pavlovian response to music, maybe even emotion, because so much of it is experienced through screens, especially music. When we listen to music, we're experiencing it through a screen, or we're just kind of ignoring it. So when you go to a concert, and I noticed this, I went down to Tucson to see Godspeed You Black Emperor, which is this super intense band. They're super intense, but they start very quiet and they build up to these really intense moments. They've been around a long time. I'd say that audience, most of them were around my age. Most of them were probably 30 and older. We're not a big, you know, that's not a big phone demographic. These are not people that are often on their phones. You know, they come from the days where we didn't have phones. We had pagers, you know. But even at this show, and they had a no phone policy. They had signs up saying no phones. At this show, whenever they would hit those really intense moments, I would see phones go up. And, you know, just a few of them, because there was a policy. But you would see, you know, in this, you know, pretty good sized room, you'd see maybe 10 phones go up. And, you know, I was thinking about that, like, why is that? Like, why is it that they couldn't just keep their phone away? Also, this band is really loud, and there's basically just like a strobe light going on, so it's basically just gonna be like a bunch of flashing lights and
like on your phone.
Yeah, like, what are you getting out of this? So that got me thinking that maybe it isn't about capturing that moment. Maybe it's just because they're having an emotional experience with something that they're not comfortable having an emotional experience with. That's weird. It's like, you know, like, how often do people cry? Like, it's very uncomfortable to be in a situation where you start to cry because you're having an emotional experience that you don't often have. Music is also, it also gives you an emotional experience. And if you're not used to having that emotional experience, you're not going to know how to deal with it.
It's like a guard in a way, so that you like, you're putting your guard up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't need to. I mean, you're at a show. I mean, the lights are low and everyone else around you is having the same experience. And I think that that's scary too. It's like we're vulnerable in that way, which I understand. I understand that vulnerability, but I don't know. I feel like that, you know, coming from going to one of my back in my day speeches, but back in my day, you know, I remember going to shows where nobody talked. Everyone was listening. If somebody was talking, everybody would turn around and give a dirty look to the person talking because everybody in that room wanted to have an experience with the music, because that's what you did before, you know, before we had phones in front of our faces all the time.
It's etiquette. Yeah. It's like, it's And we're like, yeah, we're both going to be 33. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not old. You're not old either, by the way. But like, I'm not like, you know, in my 20s. So it's like, I remember a time before cell phones, you know, we started both separately because we didn't really know each other, but going and seeing bands before even texting was a thing. Yeah. So it's like, I remember what it was like. And I feel, and like I said, I hate to sound like an old mean person because I really don't mean it in that way, but I sometimes really wish these kids would get to experience it like that, because some of them don't, they really don't, they don't know how to experience just like, I'm going to be in the moment and I'm going to get lost, or I'm going to sing along, mm-hmm. and I don't have to take out my freaking phone and record it because there's like 30 million YouTube videos of the same song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it, I mean, it really is two parts to it as well, because there is that part of, I really would like it if everyone in this room was having an experience with this music, you know, to show respect for the band that has worked their ass off to get where they are. Hey, why not give them your attention? And also, turn your fucking phone off if you're going to be in front of me. Like, yeah. There's definitely that part of just like, you're ruining my experience. Not only are you ruining your own experience, you're ruining my experience. And, you know, I get a little heated about that sort of thing.
Well, it just goes back to, like she said, singing along. Why are you singing along? No one wants to hear you fucking sing.
I don't. No, there's no, a time moment saying, like, to on your sing
phone.
Along.
You're taking a video of you singing on your phone to a band.
Yeah. Okay,
so, dude, just shut. If you just shut up.
I was about to get angry because I was like,
singing along with your phone down is completely fine.
No, because I always tell them I love sing-alongs, and I don't know if that's like the old choir kid in me or if it's like the old hardcore kid.
No, that's like I, you know, if I see somebody like singing along with a band, it kind of bugs me. I'm just like,
It depends how intense they are. Because there's moments, too, that you're supposed to sing.
Yeah, but at the same time, I would never say anything to that person because that is their way of experiencing that music to its fullest potential. And that's great. And I actually have a funny story about that. One saw Damian Jurado, and it was one of his, like, he was just doing him an acoustic guitar kind of thing. And very mellow, beautiful music. Sitting about, like, maybe four people down, somebody was singing harmonies to all of his songs. And the people that I was with are just like, oh my God, like, what is she doing? She was singing harmonies to every song, and which normally fine, but this was like a super quiet show. Like, he was being super quiet, and she was singing loud enough for everyone to hear. So the show ends, we all get up, I see who it is. She walks over and says, thank you so much for introducing this person to me, introducing Damian Jurado to me. So, yeah, all of my friends were like, this is your fault. Yeah, that was fun.
Oh, my gosh. That's hilarious because you actually know.
Yeah. Not only did I know the person.
You were the reason why they
were there. Yeah.
But even going back to what you were saying about, like, it's an investment, buying records or buying something tangible. How do you feel about the subscription-based record things?
I have some mixed feelings about that. I mean, of course I'm biased because I work at a record store and I want people to come here instead of buying things through subscription. But, let me gather my thoughts on this one. So, okay.
You enter your, like, one of them, you put your Spotify on
and
there.
We know this because we literally have an episode on them and we break down different ones and we explain, like, how much it costs, what they're offering. And some of the stuff I'm just going to say it. Sometimes some of the stuff, it seems like that they offer, like, it's this much and then we'll send you a record and then we'll also send you, like, a recipe for a drink. And it's like, I understand what they're going for, but I feel like sometimes they just stuff it with stuff so it can make it seem like you're really getting your money's worth, but it's like, are you really, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, you know, people are buying records and that's cool. I don't know. I don't really know because I don't have that much experience with the online services that do that. I do have some issues with, like, the collectible. I want to put that in quotes, collectible stuff. Because it's, let's talk about baseball cards.
So that's the best way to put it, honestly.
Yeah. So baseball cards were huge when I was growing up. They've been huge for a very long time. Does anybody collect baseball cards now? Do you hear anybody talking about baseball cards now?
No.
No, you don't. I've heard that the reason for that was because I think around the time that I started buying baseball cards, they started putting out collector's edition, like collectible baseball cards. Brand new, mind you. And also not collectible because they were part of a huge series that they would put out, but they would call them collectible. So basically what that did is it kind of shifted all this focus where, you know, somebody who was just getting into baseball cards, where they would want to find that rare thing or that, you know, really interesting baseball card, they were going to put all their resources into that. Now that person is just putting all their resources into this thing that they're being told is collectible. And it basically killed baseball cards because, you know, nobody, like, everyone was just buying these throwaway things when maybe they should have been focusing on, you know, the real quality and the things that were timeless and the things that, you know, that people were actually, like, searching for. So I know that's a weird way, a weird comparison, but
no, it actually works really, really well.
Yeah, and that's I think we're seeing that with records where, you know, they are putting out these limited to 200, but that's one of like 15 to 20 records that they're putting out of that same title. So it's, you know, it's not limited to 200. It's just that color version of it, or that, you know, packaging is limited. And sure, that's cool. It's a different version of it, but I think, I don't know, I just can't get past the idea that they're just trying to pull one over on us.
It's more of like a marketing aspect of things. Like, even I see sometimes with Record Store Day, they'll be like, limited to 5,000. I'm like, that's actually pretty good run. 5,000.
Yeah.
I mean, quite a bit. I understand, like, they're saying that there's only, but it's part of, like, and it's nothing against Record Store Day because I like Record Store Day, but it's just part of, like, the marketing aspect. And I don't know, like, I understand wanting to, like, because there's people that only collect, like, variants. Yeah. Like, I want the most limited variant. I don't want the, you know, regular or whatever. And I don't fully understand it. Like, but, I mean, there's people out there like that.
Yeah, this is my thoughts on Record Store Day is I like what they do because it does kind of fall under that. But I think what it does is it gets people into record stores. That's kind of the important thing, and that's why we still, you know, we've got our issues with some of the things with Record Store Day, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's basically a way to get people into record stores that maybe wouldn't go to a record store, or somebody who, you know, hadn't gone to a record store in a while. And but what we see like the people that are selling things on eBay or the collectors, the flippers. Yeah. So they, you know, we have this weird thing that happens where we'll get a call from somebody who's like looking for something, and we'll say like, yeah, we may be getting that. He's like, well, can I just buy it earlier? Like, can I just buy it before records? I'm like, actually, no, if we do that, we can no longer participate in Record Store Day. And they get really upset. They're like, well, I don't understand why they're just putting this out as a limited release. And I want it. And I have to explain to them, like, well, it's because it's, you know, it's a way to support record stores. It's a way to get people to go to a record store.
It's about record store culture.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And it's not about the collectible item. It's about what it represents. And I think that's something different than, you know, doing these not really limited things. And Record Store Day titles are limited because they're only releasing them on that day. It's a rare thing for them to actually re-release it after Record Store Day. It does happen occasionally, but it's pretty rare. Whereas a lot of these like limited releases, they're just variations on things that you'll be able to get for a long time. So yeah, it's a little bit different, but yeah.
I know you guys always, because we always come here on Record Store Day, and you guys always, your line is like far. So we always try to get here early, and we always think we're here early, and we're not here early enough every time.
Yeah. Yeah, we usually have people lining up at like 8 o'clock at night the night before.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah. No, the past few years we've had people waiting out, like camping out outside. Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah.
Well, I think that, well, with the different variants and colors and 180 gram and all the other nonsense, I think for some people, like I said, it's the flippers. And for some people, they just want to feel special, like they're a part of that 2500 club.
It's a tricky thing when you're getting into something new, where, you know, we're all guilty of trying to do things the right way, or, you know, do something that's going to, like, you know, bring up our social station and things like that. So yeah, it is tricky. And I think that for some people that might be the case. It might be the case that they're just thinking like, oh, well, I'm a record collector, so I'm going to buy collectible records. I've never called myself a record collector. I don't judge anyone who does. But yeah, I don't collect records. I listen to records. I buy them to listen to. And, you know, if somebody wants to collect records, that's totally fine. But, you know, I think that you, like with anything else in this world, you have to look for, is somebody just taking advantage of me because I want to be a collector? I would love it if there were more collectors. You know, I love going to someone's house where they're like, oh, this is a rare whatever, you know, there were only so many of these made in, you know, 1950, whatever. Like, I love that. That's great. It's like a little piece of history. And there is a story behind those things. Even if I'm not the type of person, I don't dish out a ton of money for some collectible record that I would never want to listen to. I'm going to buy, you know, a record that I wouldn't mind beating up a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was my next question, is like, those people who buy that, those super rare, those rare records, like, how often do you listen to it?
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between buying a collector who listens to their collection of music, and there's a collector who wants to have the different copies.
And I feel like, and to like the 45 community, and yeah, we collect 45s too, don't get me wrong, but it's really big in like the whole like getting that like really rare like pressing or whatnot and stuff like that. And I like, okay, so would you, if you had a choice, okay, let me give you this big what if. So if you had a choice between getting an original pressing of something and then there was, say, an actual repress of it, but the original was like some crazy amount of money that you're like, I don't know if I would pay that, and the original was just like $10, mm-hmm, which one would you pick?
$10. Yeah, no. Let me ask you this. Does the repress have the same music on it?
Like, is it actually a legitimate repress and not a reissue? Yeah, it's a legitimate repress. It's not
analog.
From the analog.
I don't even care about that. Does it have the same music on it?
Yes,
that's
literally
all I care about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So there's in like some of the 45 circles that we're not necessarily like, we just know about these.
We're familiar.
We're familiar with. They are all about having original copies of these like old soul songs.
Yeah.
And, but you, like, there's certain people who are out there bootlegging them and selling copies for $10.
Shout out to Galaxy Sound Company.
Yeah.
I love them.
And they're bootlegging these songs. But you know what? Who gives a shit? I don't want to pay $700 for one song.
You want to listen to that song.
I just want to own it. I don't care how I get it.
Because I'm going to listen to it.
Because I want it. Because I want to experience it and I want to listen to it. I want to own that tangible. Because I can listen to it on my phone. Anybody can listen to it on their phone.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know. Because I'm not a collector, because I don't think about things that way, I don't know what the appeal is for them. You know, and it's not for me to say like, oh, you're wrong. You're buying records wrong. Because I just don't know, but I do know that, you know, there does seem to be a divide with that audience where, you know, we get a lot of shit for not being the kind of record store that's like, you know, that if somebody comes in and says like, you know, I'm looking for like, you know, an audiophile copy of this and that, I'm like, well, we have that. Is that one? I don't know. And then, you know, sometimes they'll get a little upset
with us.
That's a whole other.
Yeah, because we're not audiophiles, but that's what we always say. Like, there's little different, like, segments of the community. Like, it's like, okay, if everyone does buy records, but there's different types of people who buy them, in a sense, like, for different reasons. Or even, like, our one time, I remember we bought some Clash record that we didn't have from a record store here. And the person that was checking him out, I remember, like, that was, you know, he's like, okay, you know, this is how much it is. And he's like, you really want that? Like, look at the sleeve. And he's like, but the record itself is fine. Like, I don't give a shit if, like, obviously you want the sleeve to be nice, but he's like, you're pricing it cheaper because you think that someone's not going to buy it because the sleeve's, like, not in primo condition.
Yeah.
He's like, but I'll take it because the record sounds fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Is the music on there?
I mean, yeah, I think that there's obviously different stores who cater to audiophiles and
how great for an audiophile to be able to go to a store where there's someone who can talk to them about that. I'm glad we have those stores because we're not that store. Yeah, and that's it's hard for us when somebody comes in and they want to talk about that stuff, and I'm just shrugging my shoulders, and I don't want to seem like snobby towards them, like, oh, I don't care about that. Like, then I'm no better
you're
than anyone else.
You're just not well-versed enough to know exactly what, like, what they specifically want.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And so, you know, I do try to explain my position if they're interested in hearing it. I try to tell them, like, yeah, you know, I just never paid attention to that. You know, it's not something that...
It's not your lane.
Yeah. And you know, and one thing that I do, something that I do try to, you know, pass on to people is the idea of, okay, let's back up a little bit. We get people that come in looking to buy record players. And a lot of times it's their first record player. So oftentimes they'll be really concerned with sound quality for their first record player. And, you know, they'll talk about, you know, wanting to spend, you know, or they wish they could spend this much money. And I always tell them, like, no. Like, buy that cheap record player. Buy those shitty speakers. buy that stuff.
Buy what you can afford.
Buy what you can afford.
Always say this.
Oh yeah, God. Buy those things, and I'll tell you why. Because you're going to listen to your music on it. It's going to sound awesome. You're going to put on a record, and you're going to be like, this is amazing. This sounds so good through these shitty speakers and on this shitty record player. It, you know, it probably doesn't sound great, but you're having an experience with it. This is the cool thing that happens. Someday you're going to a thrift store, and you see... you know, a pair of JBL L100s for $50. Holy crap, I'm going to buy them. Or you look them up on your phone. Whoa, these are $800 speakers. You buy them. You bring them home. You plug in your shitty record player to those amazing speakers you put on that record. Whoa, this is like, yeah, you didn't realize that music could sound that good because you've experienced it not that good. Then someday you buy a better record player. Like, you just keep improving your system. And, you know, maybe someday you'll get to that point where you have that, you know, $15,000 system in your house, and good for you. But you are going to appreciate that so much more than somebody who gets into the game who just drops a ton of money on. If somebody buys that $15,000 record player or that system as their first system, they're not going to get much better of an experience than that person that bought that cheap one. And that person's going to appreciate that system so much more.
It's like you appreciate so many people as they get older. When they get their first car on payments, they appreciate that brand new car because their first car way down the line was like something where they were like, I don't know if this is even safe. Yeah. So, but it makes you appreciate it. And that's what we always tell people too. Like, because we see it so much online or even in some circles in person. And I always see it. And that's another thing. Like I said, how you're saying, like, tell them to buy that shitty record player or go buy a Crosley. And I know that's like a big controversy, like the anti-Crosley thing. And I get it. Like, I do get it.
I'll say this. If someone came in and they're like, my six-year-old wants to listen to records, I will always recommend a Crosley. I wouldn't recommend anything other than a Crosley for that. Or even, you know, my kid's going off to college or I'm going off to college and I'm going to have a dorm room. Cool, get a Crosley. You know, that's fine.
That's what we always say, because if they get intimidated, like if you're telling them this is the only way you're supposed to listen to it, yeah, it's intimidating. They're like, I don't want to listen to music like this then, because it's this elitist, ugly thing, and it just so much negativity, and I hate negativity. I'm like, just don't be that person.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm very careful about not, you know, not trying to intimidate people with the knowledge that I have. I don't have that much knowledge about record players, but oftentimes people are coming in not even knowing where to start. So, you know, it's you know, I try to put it in terms that they can relate to, but also just trying to let them know that you know, you don't have to be an expert on this. You can just have your own experience with this. There's no right or wrong way to do it. Even if you damage your record, that's not wrong. That's what happens when you listen to records. It's not the end of the world. Yeah. And in fact, like, a little side note here, like, I've got an old Columbia, like, phonograph, the kind that you crank up, and it's like, it's not powered. It's basically resonating through a giant horn. I've got, like, really old Billie Holiday records. I've got, you know, just really old blues records. I've got, like, on the 78s. That needle on that record player, like, I dropped it on my hand once, and it, like, I have a scar from where it fell on my hand. It's insane. Like, it's just this heavy metal needle. I know that every time I crank that thing up and I put the needle on that Billie Holiday record, who I absolutely love, who I share a birthday with, by the way.
I wonder what her number one song was.
it was probably her. So when I put that needle down, it is eating that record. When the record is done, I can see shavings from the record that it's done. So I am ruining that record as I play it. Guess which record I listen to the closest, which one I spend more time and energy just listening to. It's those records. Those are the ones where I sit down and I do nothing but listen to that record. I never put on a 78 and then walk off and do something else. I always listen to it, and I really listen to it.
You're playing the hell out of it, and you're like really appreciating it. So if someone sees it, they're gonna be like, "Damn, he must have loved that record."
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's, you know, I know that that record's probably not even gonna last through my lifetime if I keep listening to it. But there's something really beautiful about that. I love the idea that I'm not gonna have this forever. So every time I experience it, I'm not gonna just put it away and not experience it. But every time I experience it, I'm really gonna pay attention to it.
Yeah, you really, really appreciate the music. And, you know, listening to it on an old Victrola or whatever it mixes me up. One of those old-ass.
Columbia.
Whatever.
Yeah. Victrola's fine. I usually just say Victrola.
Because people know
it, yeah, but it's just like listening to it on one of those, like the way it was made to be listened to on that, when, like, you know, during that time period. It's so unique.
Oh, yeah.
As to, like, listening to a 70 on a current system.
Yeah. Well, it resonates. The way that it resonates off of that speaker cone, I'm going to just say cone, it's not directional like a speaker. It doesn't go a certain direction. It just kind of like resonates off of it. So it's almost as if they're in the room with you. It's this really eerie feeling. You know, I live in an old house that was built in like the 19 teens. So even that, where I can imagine, like, this may have been played in this house at that time.
It actually might have. Yeah.
Or somebody played a record player similar to this at that time. So, you know, in a way, it's then speaking to the walls and the floor, and it's speaking to the house in that way of like, hey, remember me. Like, it's a really beautiful experience. But the sound, I played it for a buddy of mine who's actually an audio engineer who does recording, and he saw that. He's like, whoa. He's like, you have one of those. He's like, I've never heard one of those before. I put it on, and he was just blown away by it. It's like scratchy and like making a bunch of noise. There's like hissing noise that's going on, but the music itself, like, there's nothing else like that. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I remember somebody told me about 78. He's like, well, it's the purest sound. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, it's just the way it's recorded.
Yeah.
It's the purest.
It's vibrating. Like, there's no electricity. There's no digital signal. There's no electricity boosting any signal. It is purely just vibrating off of that record. So, yeah, it is. But again, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, I would never say this sounds better than anything. I would just say that it's a different experience, and that's the same thing with like a Crosley. Like, it's a different experience listening to music.
Well, like, for Christmas we bought his mom, we found it at Goodwill, whatever. She wanted a record player, so we found it at Goodwill, and it was one of those, like, it belonged in the school, and it had like
a caliphone or
something. So we got it and we gave it to her, and I think we gave her like two records with it. Mm-hmm. And when she opened it up, and it's not the prettiest thing, it's not expensive, like, but when she opened it up, she like said she wanted to start crying, and we're like, what the heck? And she's like, I literally, and when I was in school, we had this exact one. Yeah. And she said she just started like getting all these memories and just like touching it and like actually playing with it, like playing it. And it's like, if we would have been like, oh, we're going to get her this nice thing, she would have been like, oh, thank you. She would have been grateful. But, like, she really appreciated that caliphone.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, yeah, we always tell people, if you can, get what you can afford.
Yeah.
Because I've seen it online, like, the Crosley shaming, it's real. People like, Crosleys are such pieces of shit. It's like, well, bro, I mean, they're
you're
not
a piece
made.
Of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop being a jerk.
No, that's something I have to tell. When people are shopping for records, I'll often tell them, like, you know, you can go online and you can look up information on these things. Or if you want to learn how to set up your record player, go online, look at them. Just don't read the comments. And, you know, like, I guess that goes with anything online. Don't read the comments.
Especially on YouTube.
yeah, exactly. But that's, you know, I have to tell them, like, you're going to hear people say the thing you have is bad. But it's so funny how often that them saying the thing you have is bad this is what's good, and it's always the thing that they have. So yeah. It just goes, it's another part
I'm
of that
the
world.
Best.
Yeah, it's another part of that world where it's not about the music, it's just about having something. It's
like
about
clout and elitism and all that garbage.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we don't need any of that.
So are there, really quick, are there any, like, do you feel like is there anything about Stinkweeds that you feel like you wish people maybe knew, or that maybe there's misunderstanding? Like, do you think that they feel like there's not enough selection in here? Like, do you,
well,
like,
we're not a head shop for one.
Do you get that a lot?
Yeah.
People still think that?
People still think we're a head shop. Yeah. Yeah, you know what? I think there definitely is that sense of, you know, the snobby record store. And, you know, the only way people are going to realize that we're not that is if they come in. But, yeah, I mean, no, we're welcoming. We welcome all people. You know, we may not have everything, but we respect your taste, and we're going to try to find that thing. If you come in and tell us how much you love Britney Spears, yeah, we don't have it, but sure, we'll try to find something for you.
Something poppy, yeah, because I actually have a ladies record club. They're called the Crate Creepers, so they experience a lot of shaming because they do like Britney Spears or whatever it is they like, and I'm like, it pisses me off because I'm just like, who are you to tell them that it's bad? Like, you can say it's not my cup of tea, and you know, with anything, but then it's like you're saying, then suggest something else that is maybe similar or somewhat in that lane, and you're not telling them to buy it. You're like, we don't have that, but we do have this if you want to listen to it, because you guys actually have listening stations here, right?
Yeah, we have listening stations. We have 40 titles in there, and we switch them out every month. And we just started on the blog. We just started a new series where we pick 5 of our favorites that are in there. But, you know, to encourage people to come in and see what your favorites are. They're just, you know, it's very personal. Like, oftentimes when we're doing these reviews, it is very much based on, you know, what I am listening to, or what, you know, Lindsay, I'll often ask her, like, what's something that you've been listening to you'd like to highlight? But always to let people know that this is what we like. Come in and find out what you like. So, yeah, it's not about, again, it's not about what we like. Like you were saying, that just that shaming aspect of it, which, you know, honestly, I can't really say that about any record stores in town. I can't say that any of them are total assholes, but that's, I think that is this preconceived idea of what a record store is, that you're going to get shamed for your taste, which just seems so silly to me. Like there's so many individuals in this world. Why are we judging people on anything?
And why are you
really
even caring?
Why do you give a shit? Like, yeah, if you can't be the kind of person that has like a specific taste and a specific style and expect people to treat you with respect when you're not doing the same thing. Like, you gotta, yeah, just let people be who they are.
The golden rule.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Heard of it? Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Like, let's just all get our heads out of our own asses for once. And then Trump. No, never mind. Never
mind. Don't get us started on that.
Oh, you guys don't like him either? Oh, cool.
I know. Well, that's a misconception about Arizona. I will say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I feel like we can go on longer, but I don't want to take any more of your time. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap it up here?
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate that. As far as this record store goes, everyone is welcome. As far as other record stores go, I think people shouldn't be afraid. You know, if there is somebody that's being an asshole to you, tell them. Tell them they're being an asshole. I think the world, we all need to learn how to behave around each other. And
say,
I think that,
I don't like the way you're treating me.
Yeah, I don't appreciate the way you're treating me. And then maybe, you know, you could drop our name, say it's Stinkweeds. They treat us great. You don't have to do that.
They're not assholes.
They're not assholes.
You're a
there.
Fucking yeah. asshole.
They let me play on my Crossley there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I think when I talk about music and all this stuff, it oftentimes just comes down to who we are as people. I think that's a big part of it. It's not because I can't, like I said, I don't like to share, not that I don't like to, I don't often share the music that I listen to. I don't often tell people about that unless I know that they're into that. So it does have to be a conversation about something else. And it doesn't have to just be about music. It has to be about, you know, being welcoming and having experiences. That's the biggest thing is, you know, through our blog, through anything, any conversations that I have, it often comes down to having an experience and having a meaningful experience. And a lot of times that meaningful experience involves other people. Actually, every time, if you go to a concert, you're not just listening to music. You're there to experience somebody sharing something with you. And I think you need to go into that with some level of respect. Same thing when you buy a record. You know, it's when I buy a record, I'm considering how much work goes into that. I've recorded albums before with my own bands. It's not easy. It's not cheap. It's not easy. It's not even always fun. There's so much that goes into it. And, you know, if you ask any musician, how do you want people to listen to their music? They're probably going to say, oh, I'd love it if somebody bought our record and, like, you know, sat in the dark and listened to it on headphones. That's probably what they want. The amount of work they put into that. And that's why I really try to push the point that, yes, you can listen on your phone. Yes, you can listen to a streaming service. But you have to ask yourself, am I putting as much attention into this that was given to make it? I think that that's an important thing with art, anything, like people, conversations, everything. Like, let's just show respect for, you know, individuality, show respect for hard work, show respect for art, any of those things. I think we need to just be a little more mindful of, you know, how the world works and how we fit into that.
Yeah, and that maybe the world doesn't revolve around us. And
no. Again, like I said earlier, we all just need to pull our heads out of our own asses.
And to say, too, I think an important part about coming into the record store is because you can listen to Pandora, but on those Pandora stations, it's literally just a playlist, and that's why it ends up looping back. And yeah, when you come into a record store, like, you can come into the store every day and there could be something new every single day. So mm-hmm. It's like, there's nothing like coming in here, talking to people, whether to employees, to other customers. You'll be surprised by the connections that you might make, the friends you might meet, or just the people that you might see around and that are welcoming. So I encourage you to come to any record store, of course, over here at Stinkweeds. And thank you so much for giving us your time.
Absolutely. This was a blast.
Yeah, thanks for letting us hang out with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and just talk about what we talk about.
Anytime. You don't have to bring microphones every time. Anytime you guys want to talk about music or whatever.
We're going to come in here and we're going to have a conversation with you, and we're just going to go on the podcast and be like, this is what we talked about with Dario.
We had a long conversation about pickles this time.
Yeah, I would like to get back to that at some point.
Well, thank you so much. And just really quick, throw out those actually one thing before we leave. Do you guys run Silver Platter?
We do. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Silver Platter is a website. I don't even know how long it's been going now. I think it's probably been like close to 10 years, if not over 10 years. But it's a website. You go on there and it tells you all of the shows that are coming to town. Not every city has this. Anytime I go on a vacation anywhere, I always try to find that website that lists all of the shows for that city. And sometimes you'll find, like, you know, like we have like the New Times, it'll have like a good amount of shows, but this is like house shows to arena shows. And we do run it. You can go to silverplatter.info. We highly recommend that you sign up for the newsletter for it. Once a week, we send you updates on what's been added, what might sell out, what we think you should go to, what, you know, or recommendations. It's really an amazing service, and it's just another part of, you know, we don't make any money off of that. It's just, you know, totally, we're doing it because we want people to experience live music. We want this to be a really, really well-formed community, and that's a big part of it. So
yeah, and I will say it's pretty helpful, because with us, like a segment on the podcast is us highlighting like an event or two, and some of them we really have to work to find, because I feel like some of the promo, it's like it's not always strongly out there. So sometimes there's an event that I wanted to highlight, but then we recorded the podcast the day before, but then they're barely bringing it up like that. I'm like, you should have put this like 3 weeks ago, and I could have talked about this.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's like, not you guys, but I'm just saying, anything like any of the smaller little things like happening here. So I don't know, but thanks for that, because it's a good resourceful tool, because it helps us.
Absolutely. And that's, I go on there all the time and just like look for what's going on. And again, you know, try to find, you know, what's that band that I don't know about that if I miss them, I'm going to regret it when they come back and they're playing some giant show. You know, that's a big thing for me. I know we're trying to wrap this up, but that's a big thing for me too, is trying to find, like, trying to catch bands when they're smaller, because you get such a great experience from that, especially like, you know, before they have that giant crowd, they're doing it because they believe in what they're doing. You know, they're trying to show the world that they have a unique voice. And it's so cool to catch a band at that point. And I will always be a fan of the smaller show. I think that everybody should make the effort to seek out those small venues. And, you know, I'm notorious for saying, oh, I saw them when, you know, that guy. I'm that guy.
Yeah, that's okay.
Nobody likes that guy. And that's often, like, you know, we have that in-store coming up. Like, this is somebody, like, you know, Stinkweeds has a long history of great in-stores with bands that went on to huge things, you know, back to,
there was about, like, 3 or 4 years, right, that Stinkweeds was really getting, like, a good mix of bands that weren't being booked anywhere, right?
Probably longer than 3 or 4 years. Yeah, I mean, if in the 90s, early 2000s, I mean, we were bringing in tons of great bands like Sleater-Kinney. Elliot Smith played at the Tempe Stinkweeds.
So did it kind of transition because of the Modified? Because back in the day, I used to go to the shows at the Modified when I was younger. And I remember just seeing, like, these random ass, like, you'd go to see one band, but then you'd see, like, these other bands, and then you'd get into that band, and then I would constantly go there because I knew, like, even if I maybe didn't know any of the bands that night, I'd at least like one or two. Mm. So it'd be like I'd be able to expand my musical palette because I'd be like, oh, well, the Modified, there's a show there. I'm just gonna show up.
No, that was a result of basically Kimber, our owner, since 1987. Kimber has a knack for seeing where there's a need for something. You know, even when she opened the record store, she saw it as a need for this kind of record store. We had record stores, but we didn't have this kind of record store. So she opened it up. And then that translated into seeing a need for a place for bands to play that are on tour that usually would skip Phoenix. She saw a need for that. She saw that there were people in town that wanted to hear these bands live. She would reach out to those bands. They would come in and play. That then translated to Modified, which was an art gallery that she opened up, which she saw a need for a venue, a bigger venue than, you know, a tiny record store for these bands to play. And, you know, now that has her knack for that has turned into, I don't know if you're familiar with Local First Arizona. Like, that's a huge deal now. It is a big thing that has made a huge change with our culture, with small businesses, even just like culture across the board. There was a need for that. There was a need for supporting smaller businesses. There was a need for supporting communities, a need for, you know, getting the word out to people that, you know, that you should spend your money in your own hometown. You should spend it at businesses where they're spending their money in their own hometown, where they're, you know, they're getting their products locally. They're, you know, all their, like, everything they do is, you know, in-house for the most part. So it's finding that need for it, and I think that's
like her niche in a way, like always finding that need in her. And like, I have a Kimber story really quick. I've never had like a personal interaction with her. Like, I've just seen her because, like I said, I used to go to the Modified, but like I said, I was really big into hardcore music. So I remember one time I was at a hardcore show at the Modified. I was probably like 17 maybe or something like that. 17, 18, 16, I don't know. And I'll never forget that some kid was just being an asshole and was just like thrashing into everything. I don't even remember specifically what, but I'll never forget because she all of a sudden, like, she came out of nowhere and she just got on the mic and she was like, you just stop that shit. Cut it out. And she's like, I'm the only place that will host you guys because no one wants to host hardcore shows. Yeah. So you better fucking respect my venue. Yeah. And the bands are pissed because the kid was being a dumbass. I don't even know who the kid was, but I'll never, like, that impacted me so much. Just seeing like this tiny little woman just go and me being, you know, in the hardcore scene, there was like girls in it, but there wasn't that many.
Yeah.
But it was like just seeing her just like navigate through this crowd of like, she didn't give a shit. And she just went in there, told us all, and we were like, oh, okay, no, she pissed her off.
Yeah, and that's another thing.
But it was like in a good way.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, she's very compassionate in that way where, you know, instead of just kicking this person out, like instead of dealing with this as like, this is one person who's a problem, let's get rid of them. She saw it as, no, this is kind of a bigger problem than that, and it needs to be addressed. And addressing that was telling them, hey, let's all respect this thing that you're enjoying. You know, instead of like, yeah, you know, I talk about my girlfriend who's a teacher. Like, she does the same thing where, you know, if a kid is acting up, she doesn't just punish them right away. She talks to them. She figures out what's going on. And a lot of times you find that there's a culture of, you know, maybe like their friends are misbehaving and, you know, they start getting it. So she addresses everybody. She addresses the bigger problem instead of just punishing the one, you know, bad actor.
Just thinking like, oh, it's just an isolated thing. It's like there's a reason they think it's okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that, again, like getting back to, you know, the knack she has for finding a problem and being able to fix it. Like that's a big part of it, is just seeing that it's not just about one person's action. It's about a bigger thing. And, you know, that translates to a lot of things in this world where it's not, we tend to just blame people for problems when we're not actually looking at the cause of those problems. So.
Exactly. So I know she'll probably never listen, but thank you, Kimber, because you impacted me with that. Like, I don't think you understand, like, how I was just like, wow, like, okay. And just, I always remembered that. Like, so anytime I would pass by the Modified, that would pop in my head. Or, like, I would come in here, and sometimes she'd be in here, like, mm-hmm. at the counter. And I'd be like, I know she probably does not remember that because that was just another day in her life. But
she does that every day.
But yeah. But I, like, that, and just seeing, like, a strong, like, woman up there, I was just like, yes.
Yeah, that's
like,
huge. And thank you. You're talking about, like, your record club that you belong to. Like, that's something we try to get across to people, too. It's like, we are owned and managed by women. You know, I'm the only male who works here. And, you know, and it, I have no problem with that. There's no part of me that's intimidated by that or, you know, feels like a lesser of a man because of that. Like, that's – no. Like, that's – this is how the world should be. It should be. Exactly. Yeah. 4-1. Three to one. Yeah.
Well, I do appreciate you so much. Like, really, thank you so much. We didn't know how – stink like you guys would respond to having us come over here.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know if they're gonna let us interview anybody. And like in a negative way. It's just that we know people, you know, have lives and stuff like that. And the worst someone can say is no if you ask.
I work part time at a record store. I have time.
So you said you're part time, so what is like your actual job, if you don't mind me asking?
No, this is my job. Yeah. This is my main job. I say part time because I don't work. Sometimes I work 40 hours or more, but you know, usually it's like under 40 hours. But I also I do a lot of things. I'll occasionally book shows. I work with like the Newton, where like Changing Hands is in Phoenix. I'll book shows with them occasionally. I haven't done one in a while, but we're looking to get back into it. I do live sound for some events, mainly for a lot of Local First events, like the Local First Fall Fest, which is coming up. I'm going to do another plug here. November 3rd, they're having the Fall Fest, where it's just this giant festival that features local businesses. So there's just a bunch of like tents or canopies, whatever, with these booths with local businesses. It's amazing. Awesome bands. They get great bands out there. They have Phoenix Afrobeat Orchestra is going to be playing this year. I haven't gotten the full lineup, but I do know that they're playing, which is very intimidating because I have to do sound for them.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And they're awesome.
They're awesome.
Oh, yeah, they're great. But yeah, other than that, you know, I record music for KJZZ's Tiny Desert Concerts. I record local bands playing in the studio there, and they do interviews. And then, you know, I play music as well, and, you know, I do a little recording. I'm going to start doing some more recording for podcasts, so if you guys are looking for some music for your podcast.
Yeah,
we actually are.
You're always looking for music for
No pressure or anything, but, yeah. So, yeah, just, you know, that's one thing I love about this job. It affords me the time to do a lot of different things, but also the opportunities. That's a big part of it where, you know, so many things come past my radar because I'm here, because I'm part of this community, and it's amazing. That's something that, you know, that can't be replaced. You know, like with however much experience or education you have, like, if you know, if you don't have that sense of community or that sense of, you know, finding the thing that you do well and working within that world, like, I think that's really big.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, was the point of the podcast, just to put people out there, to highlight them in the community, to let them know that there's stuff going on. There's, even if one thing's not your thing, there's going to be something out there for you. You'll find your people. Mm-hmm. They're out there. And just like a lot of the feedback that we always get is just saying, like I said, there's a lot of transplants that live here that come to Arizona and specifically the Phoenix metro area, and just that they don't know what's going on, so they do feel like there's nothing going on. But there's there's tons going on, you guys. I promise you. There's there's too much. There's no way that even if this podcast went on forever for some reason, we would still not be able to cover it all. So just, and we always say, like, if you see a void, then just go do it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we like to consider ourselves like a welcoming committee as well. So if somebody comes into town, if they're into music, even if you don't buy records, if you come into Stinkweeds and ask, tell us what you're into, we'll show you the way. We'll show you where to go. And, you know, that's you said, like, you know, fill that void. I've definitely had conversations with people that have moved in from out of town, and they'll ask, like, oh, where do you find, like, bands that play this kind of music? And I'll kind of be stumped and think, like, you should start that band. go find those musicians, start that band. You know? So, yeah, I think that's kind of the beauty of Phoenix, too, is that it is, you could just do whatever the hell you want here. And
that's what, and we interviewed MB Alexander last week, and that's what he said. They were saying, they're like, the beauty of Phoenix is that you can kind of just do whatever the hell you want, and someone will just kind of go with it. Yeah. Like, you'll find people that are like, oh, okay. They're like, whereas other markets, it's like, you know, sometimes it's more specific.
Yeah. And it becomes very homogenous. Like, if you look at, I won't name any towns, but, you know, if you look at some scenes in some cities where basically, like, there's a competition to get into the venues, there's a competition to get noticed. So what ends up happening is you have these bands that make it in that scene, and then all the other bands are thinking, well, that band made it, so I guess we need to sound like that band.
Kind of like what happened with Seattle and grunge back in the day, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's a good thing. Maybe some, you know, you get some awesome ideas out of that, but I think that, you know, yeah, I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing, but it definitely does create this sense that it becomes the one thing that town is known for.
Like their identity only.
Yeah, exactly. Where Phoenix, I mean, maybe it's a good and bad thing, but we don't really have an identity. We're just kind of like yeah,
we're
whatever
just
you got.
Flown around.
You know, my band that I was talking about, we're like, we call it chamber folk. It's a mix of folk and classical music. like, come on. If I lived in any other city, like, they'd be like, what? Get out of here.
Yeah, we say we're in the shadow of L.A. Like,
you could say L.A. We all know that.
Yeah, we are.
I was talking about L.A.
Like, and I'm not saying that in a negative way. It's not their fault. Like, California's been a state longer. There's so much other history there that I'm not going to get into.
Yeah, they're just
California is a state. They're doing fine. Yeah. You go to San Francisco, and you got all kinds of stuff going on there.
They're just well-established
cities.
There's
more of a connected community there because we're talking to even Rosie from Palabras, the bookstore. Mm-hmm. Even she was saying just how it's funny that her followers online, most of them are from LA. Mm-hmm. Because she's like, I think they kind of get that concept of like respecting your community. And she even said too, it's just like, we just have so many people that just move here from elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Like, we have people that are born and raised here because she is too. But it's just like, there's just that aspect of, we have so many transplants. So it's harder when you're like going into somewhere and you're just like, I don't know anything. I'm just, you know, you're just kind of in your own little world by yourself.
Yeah.
So it's harder. So we're all about community building. So don't be afraid to come into Stinkweeds and to come strike up a conversation, to come buy something, ask for suggestions. Like they said, you can find them on Facebook. Are you Stinkweeds Records?
On Facebook, I think it's just / Stinkweeds.
Stinkweeds. Yeah. And if you just Google Stinkweeds, they should be the pretty sure you guys
have
been.
No, there's not many businesses out there called Stinkweeds. There's an actual plant called a Stinkweed.
You're all, but not actual businesses. Yeah. And our social media is Just Keep Spinning Podcasts. You can listen to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, pretty much anywhere you want to listen to a podcast. We're probably going to be on there. And you want to email us, it's justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much to Stinkweeds, to Dario, and for letting us invade your store. And with that being said, I guess don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks.